Hey there, it's Gary Parrish. It's Sunday, February 12th. Welcome back to the Eye on College Basketball Podcast. I got Matt Norlander here with me. And I want to open with, I think, the bracket preview show. It aired on Saturday on CBS. That's America's most watched network. That's the network of stars. The selection committee revealed the top four seeds in each region. The biggest surprise, I thought, maybe other than Florida being a three seed, Florida State being a two seed, Wisconsin being left out completely, was Gonzaga being the fourth number one seed. They are ranked number one in the country in the AP poll, coaches poll, and most important, the CBS Sports top 25 and one, but they're actually the fourth number one seed. Did that surprise you, Norlander? Should Zags fans be going crazy on the verge of rioting right now?
That's a little too hardcore, Parrish. They should not be on the verge of rioting. I also wonder if, like, Mark Few even saw this and even cared.
Trust me, Mark couldn't care less.
Yeah, exactly, which gotta love Few for that. Butler being a four was the biggest surprise to me. I actually didn't think that Butler would be in the conversation to be on the top four lines, even though the Bulldogs have good wins. They've got some concerning losses. Gonzaga not being a top two team on the list was the second biggest surprise to me. I basically thought it was going to be between Nova and Gonzaga. I did think Gonzaga would be the number one overall seed when this came out. So, yeah. Surprise, and I'll be interested to see what these committee chairman Mark Hollis does with Gonzaga and the rest of the committee, because this happens before they beat St. Mary's. Now they have the road win at St. Mary's. Now they're probably gonna it's almost a mortal lock, GP, that they're gonna end the regular season undefeated, and then they're gonna have the WCC tournament where they'll obviously have a really good chance at not losing again there. So to me, if Gonzaga enters the NCAA tournament without a loss, yeah, they better be the number one overall seed. I would certainly give them that. And this number four overall pecking order for the Zags, I think, has led some people to think that Gonzaga does not have firm ground to stand on and that a loss might bump them to the two line. I'll say this. Either Kansas or Baylor will take another loss because they got to play each other again. Villanova might not take another loss, and if they end the season with only two losses, GP, that's fine. Like that, they would have a case given their strength of schedule. I would understand if they wanted to continue with them as the number one overall seed. But to me, no matter where Gonzaga takes a loss, whether it's abnormally in the regular season and then they get the auto bid in the WCC tournament, or if they don't lose again until even, like, let's say a semifinals loss against BYU in the West Coast Conference tournament, I would have them as a one no matter what with one loss. I think they've done enough and they've earned that. I think the committee would have a lot of explaining to do if Gonzaga were to lose a game, no matter where that was, and were to drop them to the two line. I don't see that happening, because you look at the other teams on the two line. Kansas or Baylor will lose again, and so we go. But yeah, that's a long way of saying Gonzaga being number four is something that I don't agree with whatsoever.
Gonzaga undefeated is, I think, undeniably going to get a one seed, probably, I would assume, the one seed in the West. Gonzaga with one loss, I think, still deserves a one seed. I mean, when you look at their resume, I know they play in the West Coast Conference as opposed to the Big 12 or the ACC, and I admit and acknowledge they wouldn't be undefeated if they played in those leagues. But, you know, they are undefeated. And not only are they undefeated, they are undefeated with six top 50 RPI wins. Now, I know when the committee put this together, they only had five because it was before Saturday night's pretty easy victory for them at St. Mary's. Like, they led by 15 in the first half. They were never seriously threatened in the second half. Like, they controlled that from start to finish. But they got six top 50 wins and zero losses. And the wins are over an Arizona team that's obviously really good. And Alonzo Trier didn't play in that game. Gotcha. But, like, Arizona was still good then. They beat the Florida team that's beaten Kentucky, that the committee seems to think highly of because they've got them as a top three seed. They've beaten St. Mary's twice. They beat the Tennessee team that beat Kentucky. They've beaten Akron, which is a top 40 win. And here's the other thing. When you look at some of the one seeds, like, Kansas has lost at home to Iowa State. Gonzaga beat Iowa State. And I know it doesn't all match up, like, this matters and that, whatever. But, like, my point is, Gonzaga's not just undefeated against a schedule that presented no challenges. They have won all the games while watching other one seeds lose games that are similar to the ones they've won. In other words, you know, they don't have to go test themselves as often as Villanova does, but Villanova lost to Marquette. you know, Gonzaga's got certainly got a lot better wins than Marquette. In other words, they've avoided these losses that Villanova hasn't avoided, that Kansas hasn't avoided, and they've got six top 50 wins. Kansas only has seven. So the idea that you could get them as the fourth number one, which means you got to think three teams have done more this season than Gonzaga, I thought was just wrong. They got the four number one seeds correct, but they didn't get them in the right order. Now, it might not mean that much because ultimately Gonzaga is going to, you know, whether it's the number, if it's the number one overall seed, it'll be the one seed in the West. And obviously, at least according to the committee right now, if it's the fourth number one seed, it's also the number one seed in the West. So perhaps this doesn't matter nearly as much as we're making it sound like it matters. But if you're going to sit down and do this stuff, I'd like to see the order make some sense to me. And the order of the top four seeds didn't make any sense to me. The one thing I saw, though, that jumped out at me is that might help explain why they don't value Gonzaga's zero in the loss column might be because they don't care about the loss column, or at least didn't seem to care nearly about the loss column as much as I care about the loss column. In other words, Florida State is a two. Butler is a four. Florida State has three sub-50 RPI losses. Butler has three sub-50 RPI losses. Now, they both got great wins, but they do have these awful losses on the resume, and yet the committee didn't seem to be bothered by that nearly as much as I would be bothered by that. And if you agree with me there, that they don't seem bothered by Florida State's losses or Butler's losses, then what that suggests is they don't seem bothered by the loss column in general. And if you're not bothered or concerned with the loss column in general, then Gonzaga's zero in the loss column doesn't mean that much to you. Does that make any sense at all?
It does. What I think listeners should be taking stock in here is that this season should be the final season that the selection committee is so heavily relying on RPI data on team sheets that are built off of RPI numbers. And within that, you look at top 25 wins, top 50 wins. Using those columns is something that I'm against and many people are against because you cut off at 50 to 51, right? And you can get some trouble with that. And I actually think that because what you mentioned there, when you can sort out losses like that, I think it's easier to get obstructed in terms of looking at a team's resume against other like teams in a balanced way. I think looking at top 25 wins, top 50 wins, top, you know, sub 50 losses, stuff like that, it should be more including where you won and neutral away. How have you done in those kind of regards? And by the way, these concepts have been discussed by the NCAA and should be implemented along with a composite for next year. And a quick note on Gonzaga and Mark Few. Mark Few was part of the ad hoc coaches committee that went to the NCAA last summer and said, we want, you know, A, B, and C, one of those things being a composite. And so Few, even though his team right now is not benefiting from the current system that the selection committee is using, I actually believe that they went off of procedures that I think they'll start going off of next year, GP, that Gonzaga would be a number two, the number two team on the overall list at worst. Florida State being a two is a little surprising. And Butler, I didn't think should have been on there. Kentucky at three, I have a hard time agreeing with. But hey, we have a snapshot here. And the biggest thing to remember is that a lot of this is going to get really jumbled come Selection Sunday.
Well, it's funny, like, you know, you do this in real time, and then I think I'd made this point before, like 2 hours later, it was going to be dated because, you know, Florida State, if you did the same process again today, Florida State wouldn't be a two. You know, they just lost at Notre Dame, and Butler probably wouldn't be a four because it just took a loss at Providence. So, yeah, all of this is very, very fluid.
Yeah, super fluid. Dude, Butler probably shouldn't even be on the five line with the loss against Providence. When you look at the totality of their losses at this point, without a doubt. So in general, the 2 through 4 line was a super cram, and there was definitely a line of separation with the one seeds and everyone that was a two overall. But yeah, Gonzaga in the win at St. Mary's, that's a huge one. I by the way, I am putting myself self-administered regular season probation, GP, right alongside you on straight up calls, because I said St. Mary's would win straight up over Gonzaga.
Nope.
And I said Xavier would win straight up over Villanova.
Nope.
I was way off on both, so I'm done.
Yeah, and you weren't close. Xavier didn't come close to winning. Like, it wasn't even a competitive game in the second half. And then, of course, I know St. Mary's, like, made a little late run at one point, but Gonzaga was never in trouble at all. They controlled it. I believe they led for all but 22 seconds of the game. Like the first, like St. Mary's scored first and led for 22 seconds, and I think after that it was all Gonzaga. And so now they're 26-0 with 23 double-digit wins, six top 50 wins. Like it's a hell of a resume, and it's a good basketball team. Ranked number one at KenPom, top five offensive efficiency rating, top five defensive efficiency rating. Interesting, Tom Furman, who's an odds maker, tweeted me earlier in the day, and he said that year in and year out, professional bettors tend to think that Gonzaga is overrated, like overrated by the public, overrated by the polls. But he said that's not true this year. Like they're not to the extent that maybe in a different year you would yell Gonzaga's overrated. They wouldn't be rated here if they played in a real league. Like in some of those years you might be right, or at least there are professional bettors gamblers who would agree with you. But if you're saying that right now, and trust me, every time I tweet about Gonzaga, I got people saying that right now. Just know that the professional gamblers, they don't agree with you this year. They look at this Gonzaga team and all the ways that they look at this Gonzaga team, and they think it's legit. And yet, ultimately, it's just going to, and we've talked about this before, so we don't have to spend a lot of time with it. But it's just going to come down to, can they go to the Final Four or not? Because if they don't, it'll be used to discount their entire body of work. And it'll be used by people who will insist they didn't deserve the one seed to begin with. And my big problem with that has always been, we don't say that about any other school. Like most number one seeds, year in and year out, don't go to the Final Four. And when it's Kansas, we just say, hey, what are you going to do? Sometimes Kansas loses, it's basketball. And when it's Virginia or when it's Arizona or when it's whomever, it's like, hey, the March Madness, here we go again. But when it's Gonzaga or Wichita State, or somebody from outside of the power structure, if they don't live up to their seed, there's a contingent of fans who always insist what it proves is that they didn't deserve their seed. And I just think that's so fundamentally wrong. Like Gonzaga is going to, based on what Gonzaga has done this season, deserve to be a one seed. And then they'll have to go play a single elimination tournament of 40-minute basketball games. And guess what? They might get caught somewhere. Just like, guess what? So could happen to Villanova as well. Could happen to Kansas as well. Could happen to Baylor as well. I just wish we would get to a point where Gonzaga falling short of the Final Four as a one seed doesn't obviously mean they didn't deserve the one seed with some fans, but I don't think we're going to get to that point.
I agree.
So you and I both were traveling yesterday, at least early yesterday. I think you traveled in the afternoon, actually. But it was a busy Saturday of college basketball, but not like a crazy Saturday of college basketball. Like nothing really that interesting happened. Like Florida State lost at Notre Dame. But really outside of that, Butler lost at Providence. But outside of that, like everything's just sort of went the way it was supposed to go. The teams that were supposed to win won. Did anything at all stand out to you?
Not particularly. Actually, I did expect Butler to lose at Providence. I just thought they were ripe to get picked off there. And I still think Butler's going to be an interesting team because come tournament time, no matter where they end up with their seeding because of the wins they have, I find it largely untrue when people say anyone can get beat and whatever. Like I get the sentiment there, but Butler's like, if you want to look at a team that's like a top 20 level kind of team, Butler's the one team that I actually think has the greatest spectrum between, oh yeah, they're in the Final Four again, or wow, they lost by 10 in the first round. I don't think there's any team that would be on the six line or higher that's can match Butler in terms of that. So that didn't surprise me too much. Notre Dame, just real quick on Notre Dame. So they hit some snags. They were looking good, and then they took on too many losses overall. But now they're going to be in a good spot here. That win was pretty big for the Irish. They've got a soft schedule down the stretch here. They got Boston College and North Carolina State, both on the road. Not a guarantee that they'll win both games, but if they can get both those, then they have G-Tech and Boston College at home, finish up with Louisville. So Notre Dame might do itself well heading into the ACC tournament to kind of reestablish its seed line and all of that. I was just real quick.
On Notre Dame real quick, because okay, they fell out of the top 25 AP top 25 poll last week. And I like didn't even notice until I was updating the top 25 and won. And I realized Notre Dame wasn't on the top 25 scoreboard. You know, when you go look at the top 25 scoreboards, like they weren't on there and they were playing, I guess it was Wake Forest. So I was like, oh wow. Like AP voters dropped Notre Dame out. Like why? And the reason is obvious. They were on a 4-game losing streak. But if you look at like, they were on a 4-game losing streak and they had lost 5 of 6. But when you looked at the losses, they had lost at Florida State, to Virginia, at Georgia Tech at the buzzer. And I know that's not great, but like North Carolina lost at Georgia Tech too. Like Georgia Tech's got some wins this year. And then they lost to Duke, and then they lost at North Carolina. And so I look, you never want to take that many losses. I'm confident Mike Bray was going crazy, but like you could still lose all those games and be a top 25 team. And I even wrote about it, I think, after the Wake Forest win. Like, the idea that people don't think Notre Dame is a top 25 team is just, it's silly to me. Like, look at the losses they've taken. Really, if you look at all the losses, Villanova, Purdue, Florida State, Virginia, Duke, Carolina. One loss to an unranked team. Meantime, they've got victories over Northwestern, over Louisville, over Clemson, over Miami, over Virginia Tech, over Syracuse. Like, that was a top 25 team with a top 25 resume. They just took a whole bunch of losses, and AP voters just flipped out. But they'll be back in on Monday afternoon, I would assume, because in this past week, they get the Wake Forest win, which is a good win. Wake Forest, the top 35 KenPom team. And then they get a Florida State win by double digits. Florida State was somebody the selection committee thought was worthy of a two seed in the hypothetical brackets that they put together over the weekend. So Notre Dame will get back in the AP poll on Monday, I'm assuming, but they should have never dropped out.
Yeah, I would agree. So in terms of the weekend, what stands out? So I was at NC State Wake Forest. I know that's not wasn't a marquee game by any means, but I was basically a situation where I had enough time before my flight out of there to scoot over to Winston-Salem. Had never been. Why not check out a pro prospect in John Collins and another, obviously, top five pick in Dennis Smith. And so I saw that game. So my takeaway, GP, from the weekend, though, is that we have two coaches whose fan bases are now really starting to get vocal about wanting to get them fired again. And we won't get into the coaching carousel for a good few weeks here still. But I did talk with Mark Gottfried at NC State. Indiana also lost. I'll get to that in just a second. NC State fans are increasingly frustrated because this is arguably the most disappointing team in the country this year, and they've got some competition for that. I thought NC State would finish in the top three of the ACC. They are brutal, and they flat out gave up. They were just down early against Wake, didn't have any fight. And, you know, I spoke to Dennis a couple of days prior to the game and asked him about – he's never lost at this rate ever. You know, no matter what kind of league, high school, AU, he's never had losing like this. So I was asking him how he was taking that. And not well, but he does seem to have a certain – I say that he didn't say this to me. I say this from my perspective. He is not happy with this season, but at the same time, I think he's got enough maturity to know that he is going to the NBA and bigger and brighter days will probably be ahead, even though he'll probably go to a bad team. Interesting guy, gave me a lot. But as for Gottfried, they're in an interesting situation because their AD is like 2 years out from stepping down and leaving. And so if they want Gottfried out, okay, then she hires another coach. And will that coach be in good standing with whomever takes over at the AD spot? The NC State situation is really weird. They're dying to get Archie Miller to go there. Personally speaking, not ask Archie about this. Don't have the intel. I don't see why Archie Miller would go to NC State. That is like the dream hire for State fans. He played there. I get it. Don't see that happening.
I don't see that happening either.
I don't see it. Because, listen, Archie Miller is in a position where he can have a top 15 job, maybe top 10 job in the sport when he wants it. He's not going to go to NC State.
All right, listen, if Arch was just trying to bounce from Dayton ASAP, like, he could have done that already. He has – I'm not saying he's copying Shaka because, like, he's his own man. He's got his own goals. But, like, he's following the same map that Shaka followed at VCU, also in the Atlantic 10. Just keep winning here, which he's doing, first place, Atlantic 10. Just keep winning here. And don't take the – and Shaka never said this, but just trust me, this was Shaka's way of thinking. If you've got a B job now – and I should be careful with that phrase. If you've got a B-level job right now, don't take a B-plus job. You can get from where you're at now, you can get to the A job. You can get to the top 10 job in America from this job. You don't have to do a middle step, so don't do the middle step. And so Shaka was never going to go from VCU to North Carolina State. He was going to go VCU to Texas or VCU to Louisville or VCU to Kentucky or VCU to Ohio State. And I think the same thing with Arch. Perhaps, you know, it being his alma mater could be a something that matters to him. But I would be shocked if he's the next coach at North Carolina State. I think he's more likely to be the next coach at Ohio State, the next coach at Louisville, one of those types of jobs. And North Carolina State is not one of those types of jobs, no matter what North Carolina State fans think.
And I think a lot of State fans understand that, though they wish it was better, and they've got a laundry list of reasons why it's not even close to that. Indiana is now in free fall, would not be a tournament team if the tournament started today, and now it's got to do a whole hell of a lot to even get into the field because the Hoosiers lost at home by 12 to Michigan. Photos were sent out on Twitter. I mean, the place looked maybe 60% full at Assembly Hall. They're on a three-game losing streak, have lost 5 of 6 GP, and now they got to turn around. They got to play against a Minnesota team that's fighting for its life to, you know, to stay on the bubble and be in the at-large picture. Then they got to go play against Iowa. Then their next game is at home against a Northwestern team that could also be, you know, just dying to get into the tournament and might need a win in a huge way. And then I'm not even done. They play at Purdue and then at Ohio State. For the next 5 games in the regular season to close out the year are on the road. Indiana is not going to be in the NCAA tournament. They could, if this really goes sideways, not even qualify in the NIT. This, of course, leads people to believe that Tom Crean should be fired. They've got his buyout watch, which drops significantly on July 1. I'll remind everyone that Indiana made the Sweet 16 last year. Tom Crean won the freaking league. They won 27 games. I don't see how Tom Crean gets fired, but I know right now, as we record this podcast on Sunday night, Hoosier fans are absolutely lighting up social media and message boards wanting to know when this guy can leave. I'm just telling you. I mean, Gottlieb tweeted, I might as well Gottlieb tweeted that there's buzz in college basketball if Crean will kind of dip out and hit like a soft landing job, similar to who am I thinking that did this?
Josh Pastner just did it.
That's exactly, yeah. There we go. Pastner leaves Memphis and goes to Tech. I cannot speak to the validity of that. Gottlieb probably has some people that have told him as much, but my prediction is that Indiana has Tom Crean on the sideline next season.
Here's what I can tell you is that there have been people who have suggested to Tom to do that before, like before last year's team that won the Big Ten. So it would have been after the 2014-15 season. There were people I know who were pushing him, like not pushing him, but just saying, hey, like you might want to parachute out of this thing because you go into a year where you're on the hot seat. If it doesn't go well, you're going to get fired. And he resisted that. Like he would not even, to my knowledge, he wouldn't even seriously consider it. And there were some opportunities out there like, hey, if you want to get involved here, we can get you involved here. And my understanding was that he just like, no, I'm the Indiana coach. I'm not walking away from Indiana. And it went well. Like they won the Big Ten outright last year, won 27 games, went to the Sweet 16, like you said. Here's the problem, and I've said this before, I've written this before, and this is a perfect example of it. Once you get on the hot seat, you never get off of it.
I knew you were going to say that.
Once you get on the hot seat, you never get off. Even if you have a great season, like last season, your next bad season, you're right back on it, if not fired. Yeah, like once you get on the hot seat, you're typically one more bad season from being gone, almost regardless of when that bad season actually comes. And so here we are with Tom at Indiana. I would say two things. One, his best player is hurt, and two other players have missed extended periods of time. Like, does that not matter to anybody as it relates to whether somebody should keep their job? Like, it seems sort of crazy. Like, this is a team that, when fully healthy, was beating – who did they beat early? Kansas and beat Duke?
South Carolina.
Yeah. I mean, Kansas and Carolina, right?
Yeah, Kansas and Carolina. And those could be GP. Those could both rate as top 10 wins by the end of the season. And I wonder if we've ever had a situation where a team has won games against two top 10 teams and not had an at-large bid of the tournament.
It's like if I were an Indiana fan, I would be frustrated. But then I would go, OG got hurt. Thomas has missed time. James has missed time. We just got unlucky this year. You know, like what? Like, I mean, that's really what it is. You just got unlucky with health. I mean, if you want to speak to larger problems within the program, like I'll let somebody who covers Indiana every day speak to that. I'm just saying, on a very basic level, the idea that you would lose your job a year after winning the Big Ten outright, based off of little more, I think, than your whole damn roster got hurt, seems insane to me. But, like, whatever. I've watched athletic directors and fan bases do insane things previously, and I'm sure there'll be more to come in the future. But it is true. Like, let's say that he does keep his job. And the other thing, like, the buyout drops on July 1st. Well, you can't wait and fire somebody on July 1st. That's just – if you're going to do it, you got to do it, you know, like, as soon as this is over or not. But, like, waiting till July 1st to save some money – that would it wouldn't be worth the money you're saving if you're trying to run a big time basketball program. But either way, it comes back next year. He is definitely on the hot seat. Like, he's on all those hot seat lists, you know, that'll be printed in October and November. And it makes you wonder, like, yeah, should you, should you look around and just say, hey, you know, quality of life, peace of mind, fresh start, lowered expectations. Is it time to just go? That is what Josh Pastner did. You know, he just said, listen, I got an opportunity to get out of here, to remove myself from this incredibly stressful and situation where my fans have turned on me. And he did it. And I thought he was smart. I think what Tom might argue, and I want to be very clear, these are words he's never said to me, but that his career is good enough now that if he did get fired, you could ride this thing out to whenever it's over. Just, hey, you know what? They're going to fire me someday. Whenever that day happens, I can still get another job. The way Mark Godfrey got North Carolina State, like, I can still go get another job. I don't have to parachute out for another job. Even if I get fired, I'll still be able to go get another good job after this Indiana job, no matter when that is. And I think that might be true. Like, I couldn't you see Tom getting another good job after this job, even if he got fired at Indiana?
I could see Tom, obviously, then it depends on how it ends here in Indiana, would definitely get another job. I would not anticipate that he would get a job at like a top 30, but yes, a top 50. That would be just my broad expectation.
Right.
That would be.
So if that's your mindset, like, hey, I can get a top, let's just split the difference. I can get a top 40 job no matter what, no matter when, even if I get fired. Why do you walk away from Indiana and all this guaranteed money to take another job? Like, let's ride the Indiana thing as long as we can ride it. And then when inevitably what happens to most coaches happens to me, which is they pull the trigger on it. Then I'll go get a top 40 job somewhere else. And then, I'll try to kill that one. And then we'll call it a career, whatever. I just sometimes guys got to get parachute out, because if you don't, it could ruin your whole career. But I wonder how much difference there is between the job he could parachute to and the job he'd be able to get if he theoretically got fired anyway. Like, how much is it basically the same job? And if it's basically the same job, why not just ride it out? But I do think, and I wanted this to be very clear, I think it's crazy that he would be at risk of losing his job in this season.
And I don't think there's risk.
I don't either, because I just don't think I don't think anybody's that crazy. Like, he won the Big Ten outright last year. Was having a good season this year, and like, you could reasonably say his three most important players got hurt at various times, and one was lost for the season. What are you gonna do? Are you telling me somebody else could win under these circumstances? If so, go hire that guy. If you could find somebody who could win when their best player, projected lottery pick, is gone for the season, and two other players have missed significant amounts of time, two like the two other top three players. Like, if you can find somebody that can win under those circumstances, congratulations. But most coaches couldn't. And to you can be disappointed and frustrated, but the idea that would cost somebody their job, injuries, that seems silly to me.
I hear you.
Let me tell you about SeatGeek real quick. Buying tickets online for sports and concerts has been a confusing process for a long, long time. But then SeatGeek came along, completely changed the game. Here's why. When I used to go looking for tickets online, secondary market, I'm checking this site, checking that site, checking this site. I don't ever know if I'm getting the best deal. I don't know if I buy it over here. Is it going to pop up better over there? I'm spending a lot of time in a life where I don't have a lot of time. SeatGeek, they can handle that for you. They'll search multiple ticket sites for you to ensure you get the best possible deal. They handle the price comparison for you. So you do less work and you save time and you save money. So here's what you want to do. Go get the SeatGeek app. Download the app. Then purchase tickets to whatever you're doing. Basketball game, baseball game, football game, concert. Doesn't matter. Purchase your tickets and then use the code COLLEGEBB. That's COLLEGEBB. And SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. That's COLLEGEBB promo code. Go download the app. SeatGeek. SeatGeek. Millions of tickets in one place. Monday night, not a great night of college basketball games. You get West Virginia at Kansas, Baylor at Texas Tech. On Tuesday, nothing great there. Tennessee at Kentucky would probably be the most high-profile game, but I don't think anybody expects Tennessee to challenge Kentucky inside Rupp Arena. You think Kansas is at risk against West Virginia or Baylor at Texas Tech? I think Baylor has his hands full with Texas Tech on Monday night.
Yeah. Well, Texas Tech, yeah, I think Baylor, that could be, that's one to watch. I know that's a college hoop diehard game. I mean, if you're a casual fan, you're not checking in on Texas Tech. But listen, they should have beaten Kansas. They got out barely by 1 point. Controversial no call on a screen near the end of that game for Kansas helps them notch the win. Texas Tech is a team that has a miserable non-conference schedule. I do not blame. In fact, I don't know how much Chris Beard inherited with that schedule and how much he had to schedule on his own, but he is stepping into a new situation. Brutal. It ranks as the worst non-conference schedule in all of college basketball. I say that to say, to steal a phrase from GP, Texas Tech was only going to get into the NCAA tournament if it can really get some damage done within its league. And so having a home game against Baylor would vault the Red Raiders into the at-large picture in a significant way, because after this, they got to go to West Virginia over the weekend, and they still got games against Oklahoma State and Kansas State on the road. Those are both bubble teams within the league. This is a big opportunity for Chris Beard, who's a really solid coach, and I'll be interested to see how Baylor handles that game. Because the Bears have, you know, the Big 12 in general, it's legit. I mean, they've got Kansas coming up next, and I don't think if they lost GP, they would be a victim necessarily of looking ahead. But Kansas goes to Waco on Saturday. If Baylor can win against Texas Tech, then it sets itself up in a legitimate way to maybe steal a Big 12 regular season from the Jayhawks if they can win that game. West Virginia at Kansas obviously ties into all of this because the Jayhawks, you know, they were picked off, what, last Saturday? I think it was last Saturday.
Iowa State
got an overtime. Yeah, so West Virginia is, I think West Virginia is a team that a lot of people can't really, they have a hard time accepting, okay, oh yeah, this is a top 10 team in America or whatever, and if they can steal it at Kansas, because obviously they've already beaten Kansas once in a huge way back in mid-January, that would just be huge. That's one of those things where, like, if they won at Kansas and then kind of did whatever down the stretch, got some wins, maybe got a loss or two, people might look up and be like, whoa, West Virginia's a 3 seed in the tournament? Well, yeah, if you sweep Kansas and stuff like that, get a win at Virginia, which they already have. They've already defeated Baylor. West Virginia could wind up, I think, being better on the seed line at the end of the season than people think if they beat Kansas. But I do think Kansas will win overall. And then to wrap it up, yeah, Kentucky against Tennessee. That's not much to look forward to. Is that really the best thing on Tuesday, GP? There's nothing else.
There's nothing great. I'll run you through it. The top 25 teams that are playing: Florida at Auburn, Tennessee at Kentucky, Rutgers at Purdue. Only three games on Tuesday night. That unless like the schedule I'm looking at is not right, but like I don't know.
Yeah. No, listen, and maybe one or two teams that aren't ranked now become ranked Monday, and we get it. But whatever. That's pretty bleak. Florida getting tripped up at Auburn wouldn't shock me, but Florida's a good team. Mike White's doing a great job there this year. But yeah, it's fairly bleak until our next podcast update. But whatever, like it's the crunch is here. I mean, next thing you know, we are just coming up on the end of the season already. Can't even believe it. I mean, do you expect, though, to kind of circle this back to you, GP? I mean, do you expect either of the Big 12's, you know, number one seeds as of now, according to the committee, Kansas and Baylor, you think either will lose on it?
Oh, I think Baylor could lose at Texas Tech. I think Baylor could lose at Texas Tech for sure. I don't know that they will, but they can. You have to understand, like, Kansas almost just lost at Texas Tech, right? They Frank Mason fouled out. They needed Josh Jackson to, like, be awesome. He went out, got 31 points, acted like he was Devin Downey. Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Terry Teagle. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. So Josh Jackson was great, but without Josh Jackson being great, Kansas probably takes a L at Texas Tech. Texas Tech, if you look at their record, 16-9. So you go, oh, what's – 9 losses. 7 of the losses are by single digits. I believe the past 4 are by a total of 10 points. The past 2 at TCU and at home to Kansas by 1 point each. So they've been in a bunch of games with a bunch of good teams. They've just been on the wrong end of it at the end. But that's a legitimate – basketball team, like top 40 at KenPom. And I think we talked about this on a recent podcast. I don't care whether you're Villanova, Baylor, Arizona. If you're on the road, anybody. If you're on the road against a legitimate top 40 KenPom team, like you're gonna you're at risk. And by the way, that was my other main takeaway from the bracket reveal. There is not much difference between these teams. Like the top 16 teams in America. Like how about this? In the East, Villanova was the one, UCLA was the two. Who you like better? I mean, no, UCLA was the four.
Yeah, it was the four.
Yeah. Who you like better?
I mean, we were asked to play out this imaginary bracket like as if it was getting played, and I actually took UCLA to come out of the region.
I did too.
Dude, I think you picked UCLA to win the whole thing, didn't you?
Yeah, I got caught up in a moment. I got caught up.
It's okay. We all get caught up. It's all good.
No, but like this is the way I rationalized it, is that obviously, you know, they have issues on the defensive end, but they look like not too big of issues in the final 14 minutes of that Oregon game. But like when UCLA's at its best, and it's hard to be at your best six straight games, and when you don't guard the way they don't guard, not at your best can get you beat at any point. So like I understand all of that, but like I think UCLA at its best might just be better than everybody else. Like when UCLA is rolling, I think the best version of UCLA might be better than anybody else's best version. And so I could rationalize it that way. Now they'll probably lose in the Sweet 16, but whatever. Yeah, I picked UCLA to win the whole thing after the bracket reveal was revealed. But here's my point. Villanova's the one, UCLA's the four. We could have you and I both picked UCLA to beat them, all right? So there ain't much difference between those two teams. In the Midwest, Kansas is the one, Duke is the four. Who you like better?
I know.
Like, there ain't much.
I took Kansas.
Yeah, there ain't much difference. Okay, in the South, Baylor's.
Yeah, Kansas, by the way, beat Duke only by 2 points on a last-second shot on a neutral floor right in November.
So, okay, so, like, let's just stay in the Midwest for a second. Kansas is the one. Florida State's the two. Arizona's the three. Duke's the four. I bet you would take the three and the four over the two. And here's what I think. I would take the three and the four, Duke and Arizona, over Florida State, the two. And I don't think there's hardly any difference at all between the one, three, and the four, between Kansas, Arizona, and Duke.
And the two has more quality wins
than
all of them. I know.
I might just be judging them based on their Florida State as opposed to Kansas. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, name stuff. But, like, there ain't much difference between those teams. Okay, go to the South. Baylor's the one, Butler's the four. I think we probably both like Baylor over Butler, but Baylor's the one, North Carolina's the two. Who would you take? A lot of people, everybody take North Carolina.
I would take Carolina on a neutral right now over Baylor.
Everybody would.
Because it's just Baylor. Especially after seeing Carolina in person, I would take them.
And then Gonzaga's the one in the West, Oregon's the two. Who you like?
I like Gonzaga, but I actually would love to see that matchup.
Okay, how about this? Gonzaga's the one, West Virginia's the four. Who do you like?
Oh my gosh, that is – I like Gonzaga, but see, that's why I love the tournament, man, because we don't get a lot of that. And when we get it in November, it's different because they're – you know, the teams are coming together. It's the early part of the season. There's still things to be figured out. When you get them in March, everyone's developed. Man, that is – awesome.
Well, when you looked at that was my main takeaway, and I apologize for not mentioning when we were actually talking about the bracket reveal at the top, but like you look at those teams that are put against each other, and there ain't like you could take those numbers and scramble. No, you can't take the numbers and scramble them anyway. That's not right, because there are teams that deserve to be the one seeds. Like Villanova it clearly has a better resume than UCLA. Kansas clearly has a better resume than Duke. Baylor clearly has a better resume than North Carolina. Gonzaga clearly has a better resume than Oregon. But like once we start the tournament and none of that matters anymore, we're just playing. Like there ain't much difference between any of those teams. Almost no combination of Final Four teams based off of the bracket the selection committee unveiled Saturday. Almost like I would be surprised if Butler got there, but almost any other combination would make sense on some level. And so it really does suggest that we are headed for what should be a fun NCAA tournament. Not that they're not always fun, but this one, I think by the time we get to the Sweet 16, like every game is going to be basically a coin flip game. Like the ones and the fours, there aren't going to be much difference between them. Usually there is. I don't think there is this year. The twos and the threes, obviously, almost no difference.
Yes and no, because a double-digit seed makes the second weekend
every
damn year.
Yeah, so, you know what I mean, though. If we got to ones and fours, I don't think there'd be hardly – we'd be in coin flip games on that Thursday and Friday of the Sweet 16, and that's not always the case. So that was just something I noticed. Man, I don't know who – like, I know, here's a one and here's a four, and I don't know that I wouldn't take the four over the one. So it was just a reminder that, yes, there are teams that have had great seasons – but when you start saying, all right, but do you trust them to beat this team? Like, there's not a whole lot of difference between the ones and the fours right now. Remember, you can subscribe to the Ion College Basketball Podcast on iTunes. That's the best way to get the latest episodes as quickly as possible. So please do that. Thank you all for listening, and especially to Jennifer. She knows who she is. Sent a really nice and long note just to say she enjoys the podcast. She mentioned you by name too, Norlander. It wasn't just me. It was you as well. She says she enjoys the podcast, that it takes some stress away from her sometimes stressful life, which means we're like medicinal marijuana. We're basically medicinal marijuana in the form of a podcast. So that's cool to know. Shouts to Jennifer. We will talk again on Wednesday. Till then, take care.